We are reading Srimad Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Gita Shastramidam Punyam Japatet Prayato Pumam Vishnupadam Avapnoti Bayatokadi Bharjita. Chapter 16, Daivashura Sambhad Vibhaga Yoga, the Godly and Ungodly Temperaments. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Abhayam Sattvam Samsudhir Jnana Yoga Vivastiti Danam Damascha Yogyascha Swadayayastapar Javam. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Abhayam Sattva Samsudhir Jnana Yoga Vyavyastiti Danam Damascha Yogyascha Swadayastapadar Javam. Ahimsa Satyam Akrodas Tyaga Shantir Apaisunam Daya Bhuteshvalo Luptvam Mardavam Rir Achalpalam. Ahimsa Satyam Akrodas Tyaga Shantir Apaisunam Daya Bhuteshvalo Luptvam Mardavam Rir Achalpalam. Teja Kama Dritir Socham Adroha Natimannita Bhavanti Sampadam Daivim Abhijatasya Bharata. Teja Kama Dritir Socham Adroha Natimannita Bhavanti Sampadam Daivim Abhijatasya Bharata. The Supreme Lord said, O Bharata, all these qualities appear in a man endowed with a virtuous and godly nature. Fearlessness, gracious-heartedness, absorption in self-knowledge, charity, control of the external senses, sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, sincerity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, detachment from the mundane, tranquility, disinclination to see others' faults, compassion for others, freedom from greed, gentleness, modesty, steadfastness, vigor, forgiveness, patience, cleanliness, and non-enviousness, and freedom from egotism. Dambodarpo bhimannascha krodha parushyameva cha agyanam chabijatasya partha sampadam asurim. Dambodarpo bhimannascha krodha parushyameva cha agyanam chabijatasya partha sampadam asurim. O Partha, these perverted qualities are found in a man of demonic mentality. Pride, conceit, egotism, anger, mercilessness, and injudiciousness. Daivi sampada vimokshaya nimbandaya surimata masucha sampadam daivim abhijato sipandava. Daivi sampad vimokshaya nimbadanya surimata masucha sampadam daivim abhijato sipandava. The godly and virtuous qualities have been described as the cause of liberation, and the demoniac qualities have been described as the cause of certain bondage. O Pandava, you need not worry, for your nature is godly and virtuous. from birth. Dvo bhutas sago loke smin daiva asura eva cha daiva vishtarasha prukta asuram partame srinu. Dvo bhutas sago loke smin daiva asura eva cha daiva vishtarasha prukta asuram partame srinu. O Partha, the living beings in this world are seen to be of two natures, godly and demoniac. I have already elaborately described the godly nature to you, so now hear from me about the demoniac nature. Pravritim janavritim cha janana vidur asura na socham napi cha charo na satyam tesho vidyate. Pravritim cha navritim cha janana vidur asura na socham napi cha charo na satyam tesho vidyate. The demoniac cannot understand religious inclination or irreligious disinclination. Not a trace of purity, good practices or truthfulness can be found in them. Asatyam apratishta hamte jagat ahur anishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kim anyat kamahetukam. Asatyam apratishta hamte jagat ahur anishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kim anyat kamahetukam. The persons of demoniac nature say that the universe is nothing more than imaginary, baseless, godless, and born of their mutual cohabitation. They conclude that the whole world was created simply for lust. Etam dristim avastabhya nastatmano lapuddhaya prabhavantyugra karmana kayaya jagato hita etam dristim avastavya nastatmano lupa buddhaya prabhavanti ugra karmana chaya jagato hita. Supporting such a conception, the demons who are less intelligent, bereft of self-knowledge, and the embodiment of ghastly deeds and inauspiciousness become powerful simply for the purpose of world annihilation. Kama mashritya duspuram dambha mana madanvita mohad grihitva sadgrahan pravartante shuchibrata. Kamam nashritya duspuram dambamana madanvita mohan grihit prasad grahan pravartante shuchirata. Resorting to insatiable lusty desires, totally infatuated and preoccupied in sensual pursuits, such demons, in a mad frenzy of arrogance and pride, engage in ghastly malpractices. Chintam aparimeyam cha pralayantam upashrita kamupaboga parama etavaditi nischita. Chintam aparimeyam cha pralayantam upashrita kamupaboga parama etavaditi nischita. Asapasa satayra buddha kama krodha parayana ihante kama bogartam anya yenartha sanchayan. Asapasa satayra buddha kama krodha parayana ihante kama bogartam anyayenartha-sanchayam. Up until their last breath, they remain stricken with unlimited fears and anxieties. They are convinced that gratification of their lust is the ultimate pursuit. Ensnared by hundreds of multifarious desires and overcome with lust and anger, they go on trying to amass wealth unlawfully just for the purpose of sense gratification. Idam madhya maya labdham, idam prapsye manoratam, idam astidam apime, bhavishyati punardhanam, idam madhya maya labdham, idam prapsye manoratam, idam astidam apime, bhavishyati punardhanam. The demonic person says, today I got what I wanted, and tomorrow I will get what I want. This is all my wealth, and in the future, more and more will be mine. Aso maya hato satrur hanishye chaparanapi ishwaroham maham bogi siddoham batavam suki. Aso maya hato satrur hanishye chaparanapi ishwaroham maham bogi siddoham batavam suki. I have killed one enemy, and I'll kill others. I am the lord of all I survey. I am the enjoyer. I am successful, powerful, and happy. Adya vidyanavannasmi konyo sti sadrisho maya yakshe dasyami modisya iti agyana vimohita. Adyo vijanavam asmi konyosti sadrisho maya yakshe dasyami modisya iti agyana vohita. Aneka citta vibranta mohojala samavrita prasakta kama bogeshu patanti naraka sucho. Aneka citta vibranta mohajala samarita prasanta kama bogeshu patanti naraka sucha. Who can match my wealth and aristocracy? I shall perform sacrifice and give charity to the needy, and I shall thereby enjoy. Deluded by ignorance, filled with anxiety, victimized by allurements and addicted to sense enjoyment, those demonic persons are doomed to detestable hells such as Vaitarani. Atma sambhavita stabda dhanamana madanvita yajante nama yagyaiste dambane vidhi purvakam. Atma sambhavita stabda dhamamana madanvita yajate nama yagyaiste dambane vidhi purvakam. Always conceited, impertinent and intoxicated by wealth and grandeur, all these demons make a great show to perform non-scriptural pseudo-sacrifices. Ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodam jashangshrita man atma paradeshu prad visanto vyashukyaka. Ahankaram baladarpam kamam krodam shasansrita mamatma paradeheshu pradvishanto vyavyusutya. Steeped in egotism, mad with power, and carried away by lust and anger, utterly despising me, who am situated in their own and others' bodies as the supersoul, they ascribe faults to all the good qualities of the true saints. Tamaham dvishata kruran samshareshu naradamam kipamya jasrama shubhan asurishveva yonishu. Tamaham dvishata kruran samsareshu naradamam shivayale yatra samsasubam asurishvaiva yonishu. Because those demons are envious, cruel, evil, and decadent, I continually cast them asunder to revolve in the cycle of birth and death in the wombs of despicable demonic species. Asurim yonim apana mudha janmani janmani mamma prap yaiva kunteya tato yant yadanamam gatim. Asurim yonim apana mudha janmani janmani mamma prayaiva kunteya tato yadanamam gatim. O Kunteya, repeatedly taking birth in the demoniac species, these fools cannot come to me, the embodiment of the divinity. Thus they descend lower and lower to the most vile and degraded condition of life. Trividham narake shaidam dvaram nasanam atmana kama krodas tata lobhas tasmade tad trayam chajet trividham narakasyedam varam nasanam atmana kama krodas tata lobas tasmade tad trayam chajet. The three suicidal gates leading to hell are lust, anger, and greed. Therefore, they must be completely abandoned. Atevim mukta kunteya tamodvares tribir nara acharat yatmana shreyas tatto jati param gatim. Atevim mukta kunteya tamodvares tribir nara acharat yatmana shreyas tatto jati param gatim. O Kunteya, one who is actually liberated from these three gateways to hell acts for his best self-interest. Thus he attains to the supreme destination. Ja shastra vidim utsrijja bartate kamacharata nasa siddhim avnapnoti nasukam naparam gatim. Jashastra vidim utsrija vartate kamacharata nasa siddhim avlabhnoti nasukam naparam gatim. A person who transgresses the injunctions of the scriptures and behaves whimsically can never attain perfection, happiness, or the supreme destination. Tasmat chastram pramanam te karja karja vyavastito gyatva shastra vidannoktam karma kartam iharhasi tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya vyavastito gyatva shastra vidannoktam karma kartam iharhasi. Therefore, the scriptural injunctions concerning duty and non-duty are your only precedent. Having understood the scriptural command in this plane of action, that is, to act exclusively for the Lord's pleasure, it behooves you to now apply these teachings practically. Iti Sri Mahabharate Sapta Sahasrayam Samhitayam Vaishyasikyam Bhishma Parvani Srimad Bhagavad Gita Supanishatso Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Sri Krishna Arjuna Sambade Daivashura Sampad Vibhaga Yoga Namasadda Shojayaha. End of the 16th chapter, The Godly and Ungodly Temperaments, from the holy conversation between Sri Krishna and Arjuna in the Vedanta Yoga Scripture, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishad, from the Bhishma Parva of Sri Mahabharata, the scripture of sacred law, which was compiled in 100,000 verses by Srila Vyasadeva. So I think this is, even the small one is different to the big one also, isn't it?
Slight
difference. So, near the end of the Gita now. 16th chapter and 18th chapters is the Gita complete. Here Krishna, this is also quite a short chapter, only 24 verses. Here Krishna describing the divine and the demonic natures, or godly and ungodly nature. Maybe ungodly is a little more polite way. When I was first coming to the temple, and one of the devotees said to me, I was 14 years old boy, and they said to me and my friend, "Oh, stay with us here, don't go home, don't go back home." So, well, we have to go back, we're going back to school on Monday, we're just here, you know, like during the holidays, to go back to, no, don't go back home. Your teachers, your family, they're all demons. And I thought, oh, they don't even know my family, yeah, they can't say that, you know. So, and of course, a demon becomes like part of the devotee lexicon after a while, you know, everyone who's not a devotee, they're a demon. So, but, you know, before you come in the association of devotees, when we think of demons, we think of, you know, horns and cloven hooves and pitchforks and you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it was a little shocking to me for someone to say, oh, your family, your teachers, your friends, they're all demons. But here Krishna describes the nature of those that are saintly, godly, and those that are demonic. That is, daiva means saintly, and asura means demonic or ungodly. So, and in this world, corresponding to those qualities, two different types of living beings generally. But we see, especially in Kali Yuga, that nothing is so clear-cut. We hear in the Vedic mythology, if you like, that in ancient times, in the Satyayuga, then no demonic elements on the earth planet. The Asura, they lived on different planets. They didn't live on the earth planet. So different planets. Then in the Treta Yuga, they lived in different countries. And then in the Dwapara Yuga, in different families. But we see near to the end of Dwapara Yuga, especially, you know, if we read Mahabharata, we see the divine nature and the demonic nature in the same family, the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Essentially, they're the same family. But one side, the Kauravas, they are asura by nature, generally. The hundred sons of Gandhari, led by Duryodhan. When Duryodhan was born, there was so much, you know, like inauspicious signs in the atmosphere, that all of the king, Dhritarashtra is the king, and Duryodhan his firstborn son. And there was so much inauspiciousness for those who are able to read those signs in nature. But even maybe for those who weren't able to even read the signs, that, you know, that was said that was, you know, blood falling from the sky. You know, when that happens, you think something's not quite right in the world, you know. And, you know, many different inauspicious signs that all of the Brahmin advisors to King Dhritarashtra, they said, you should kill this child now before he can grow up to ruin the whole world. But Gandhari couldn't do it. You know, the baby was only a few minutes born, but already she was very much attached to her child. And even though she and her husband, they believed, they didn't disbelieve the Brahmins, they believed what they said. Yeah, this boy will be the cause of the destruction of the world as we know it, you could say. But they couldn't do it. You know, would Hitler's mother have been able to kill him if she knew what was going to happen in the future? Who can say? I doubt it very much. You know, even the greatest demons, their mother loves them, doesn't it? Their mother loves them, must do.
Hillary Clinton's mother was a favorite.
Yeah. So then in Kali Yuga, so in Dwapara Yuga, different families, and near the end, coming towards the Kali Yuga, the same family, but in Kali Yuga, the godly and the ungodly nature, or the divine and the demonic, living in one body. Each of us have the potential for both of those natures to come out. And sadly, by the force of this material world, we're always dragged down towards the demonic nature. If we do nothing, the material world drags us towards the demonic. Not only, I mean, you know, the political propaganda, social propaganda is also extolling these qualities, the demonic qualities, as being virtues. This is, Vedavyasa is told that one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is that what is irreligion will be considered as religion, and what is real religion will be considered as irreligion, and what is good will be considered as bad, and what is bad will be considered as good. And a man will only be considered to be religious if he has wealth. You see, this is also a very common thing that people think. You know, you can see it on the back of buses as you're going. You know, come to our church and become a winner, you know. You see these signs all the time, you know. God wants you to be prosperous. And this is their idea. And I'm not just, singling out the Christians, but all religious people, they think that the sign of God's blessing is that we become prosperous. And religion teaches us that to us. Do your religious duty, and God will shower all gifts upon you. So, you know, this idea that we should worship God because of all the good gifts that he bestows upon us. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has said, but that means if he doesn't give us any good gifts, then we shouldn't worship him. You know, that should be conditional. Only if he gives us some good stuff, then we'll worship him. But if he doesn't give us any good stuff, oh no, we're not going to bother with that. So, and, you know, these are symptoms of the Kali Yuga. And so, just like gravity always pulls us down to the earth, so our lower nature always pulls us down. So actually, in the Kali Yuga, I mean, in every age, of course, it's necessary, but especially in Kali Yuga, we have to make some attempt to elevate ourselves. And to elevate ourselves, Krishna has given some direction. And Bhagavad Gita has given us the clue to that in many places. But we can see, you know, when we're reading what Krishna says, describing the demonic nature, you can think of 100 people that fits. You know, off the top of your head, this fellow's who's vying to become the next president of the United States, he fits that description perfectly. You know, then, and so many people, and these are the people who are meant to be our leaders in the world. They're addicted to sensual pleasure, thinking that this is the goal of life. They think that the world is just produced by sexual union, and it has no ultimate purpose other than for their gratification. There's no God involved in it, and if we do give a nod to God, it's just that he's there to provide everything that we require. But no question of the world being meant for the glorification and service of God. No, it's not for that. It's for us. And everyone has to, you know, make the best of the world that we're in. You know, we're in a dog-eat-dog world, and everyone wants to be the biggest dog on the block. And the big dog eats the little dog, you know? So that's how it is. You know, everyone wanting, striving to get to the top, and it doesn't matter who they have to climb over to get to the top, because that's the safe position. When everyone is subordinate to me, then I'm in the safe position. And this is praised in this world. I saw just the other day this documentary of this like very successful businessman, and they said, and they were asking him, like, how did you become successful? Like, what drove you? And he said, from the beginning, my idea was this. Whenever I'm in any room, am I the most powerful person in that room? And if I'm not, then I must become the most powerful person in that room. And this is what has driven me to this day. So all the time, you know, power and wealth and... But this is, and people think that's a great thing. But actually this is a symptom of a demonic nature. That... You know, they're proud of they're self-obsessed, they're proud of their so-called achievements in this world. And they disregard the advice of any sane person, what to speak of the scripture. Even if the reality doesn't fit their particular view of the world, then change the facts. That's rather than change themselves. And this is also a common thing. I saw a cartoon, you know, someone had written, who wants change? And everyone, yay! Who wants to change? Everybody quiet, you see. So everybody wants change, but nobody wants to change. You know, so Mahatma Gandhi said, you know, be the change you want to see. This is very good advice. But then, you know, after describing all of these qualities, first of the divine and then of the demonic, or of the godly and the ungodly, then Krishna says, these three things are the gateways to hell. Lust, anger and greed. And so you have to leave these things, abandon these things, or rise above these things. Lust, anger and greed, they're the gateways to hell. So, you know, these are also, at least lust and greed, they're also praised nowadays, you know, as being good things. Perhaps not anger so much, because nobody wants to be faced by an angry man, but lust and greed, that's okay. But, Krishna says these are the gateways to hell. So we have to, they have to be shunned, these three things. And rather we have to endeavor to, for our eternal benefit. And what is our eternal benefit? That is to realize Krishna. So, and Krishna explains that all of these things, you know, that first of all he says, earlier on, we've already discussed this, that Krishna says, the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world is lust. And you have to kill this lust right at the beginning using the sword of knowledge. So lust in Sanskrit is karma. Not karma, but karma. Karma, K-A-M-A. Karma. And we can say, broadly speaking, that karma means anything, any desire for that which is not connected with Krishna. That is karma. Now that can be anything, desire for anything in this world, karma. And what happens when that our desire is thwarted? When something comes to block our desire for something, then we become angry. And what happens when you become angry, then you become delusional and you become, madness takes over. And, there's like a downward spiral. So, of course, people say, all the scriptures, they're always talking about hell, to frighten people. That hell doesn't exist. There's no hell. But you just ask those Syrian refugees if hell exists. What do you think their answer will be?
For sure.
They're living in hell. It doesn't mean, you have to go somewhere and have some devils prodding you with a pitchfork. You can... And hell, actually hell exists in the mind. It's a plane of consciousness. All of these things, heaven and hell, they're planes of consciousness. You can be in the same room with somebody and you're in heaven and he's in hell. Or vice versa. It's just a matter of consciousness, isn't it? Just to give a crude example, when I was a teenager and I began practicing Krishna consciousness and all my school friends, they wanted to take me out partying, So, I would go wanting to be like, I don't want to become a social leper or something, So I would go out with my friends and they're all drinking and smoking and, taking different kinds of intoxication. And I'm not interested in that, So for them, that party, it was like heaven for them. They're in heaven. But I'm there in hell, thinking, when's this going to end? When am I going to get out of this, And often I just pretend to fall asleep at those things. Even if I couldn't really fall asleep, I'd pretend to fall asleep rather than have to interact with it, with what was going on there. I mean, it's a crude example, but we can understand from that, that two people in the same circumstance experiencing the same thing, but one's in heaven, one's in hell, because it's about consciousness. So we can't, it's a foolish thing to say that hell doesn't exist or heaven doesn't exist, because we experience both in this world. We can experience heaven and we can experience hell. And there is something about the environment too that dictates that. If you go into a war, you go into one of the cities in Syria where they're being bombed and, all those things are happening, you can say you're going into a hellish situation where, you could use your time instead to go to, Barbados or something and lie on the beach surrounded by beautiful ladies, Then very easily you can understand heaven and hell. They're both here on earth. Maybe they're temporary, but everything is temporary. But again, it's about consciousness, because those things themselves don't dictate necessarily that. So who's absorbed in higher consciousness, wherever they may be physically, when they're established in that higher consciousness, that isn't affecting them. Whether they're, surrounded by lovely ladies in Barbados, or whether they're surrounded by bombs and guns in Syria, their consciousness is still the same. They're not disturbed by either way. So that's what it means when Krishna says, lust, anger, and greed, we have to give up these things. So that means we have to develop a different consciousness. A different consciousness, because it's not about the situation, it's about how we react to the situation. So something comes, like today, I'm coming here for the class, and the traffic was terrible tonight. And I'm becoming angry. And it's foolish, because there's nothing I can do about it. I can't make by my anger, I can't make the traffic any less than what it was. So I sat back and I took a few breaths and I said, okay, let it be what it will be. It's beyond your control, So my consciousness changed. I made a decision, so my consciousness changed. The anger went away. Again, it's a crude example, but we can understand that all of these things, they're all about consciousness. So when the Buddhists, they say that desire is the cause of bondage. This is the first of their teachings. So desire, that just means lust. Lust means desire, to desire something. And they say moksha or nirvana is to become desireless. But actually you can't become desireless, because desire accompanies the soul. It's part of who we are. Desire is always with us. So the real thing is not to become desireless, but to change our desire. To change our desire, rather than chasing after the things, ephemeral things of this material world, thinking that they're going to give us fulfillment. We should change our desire to try to satisfy Krishna. To try and satisfy Krishna's devotees. And by doing that, if we make that our desire, then lust and greed and those things, they won't be able to rear their head. We were just reading that on Guru Maharaj's appearance day. Sripad Tridandi Maharaj, he was reading something of Guru Maharaj's biography. And he was telling how he quoted this verse to the Diwan to try to collect some funds for opening the temple in Madras. And he said, you know, desire is never satisfied. That when I was a pig, I devoured a hillock of stool and still my appetite wasn't fulfilled. When I was an elephant, I devoured a whole forest of vegetation, but still my hunger wasn't appeased. So, and now, you know, as a human being, we're always thinking we want more, 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 and these things will give satisfaction to us. But this is all hridrogam. Hridrogam means heart disease. This disease of the heart. To always be dissatisfied with what we have. To always think, I need more, I need more, I need more. And, you know, this is... We see this in people, like that man I was telling you about, they interviewed him. Am I the most powerful person in the room? Am I the most successful person in the room? You know, this is like his thinking. So it doesn't matter. These people, they've got millions, but it's not enough. They want millions more. They want billions more. They you know, have to keep going, 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 going. But what will happen? One day they'll die and it'll be finished. And what will be the result of that? Nothing. And anyone who's a little intelligent, you see that those people who've become very wealthy, but they have a little intelligence, they realize that. Like Mr. Bill Gates, yeah. One of the richest men possibly in the world at his time. But he realized, well, what am I doing with all of this, you know? Then, you know, I have to give something back. Anita Brodick, she was the founder of the Body Shop. So she became very wealthy. She died. She got hepatitis, the one that kills you, you know. And but she had a fortune, a big fortune. The Body Shop's still going, you know, it's a big thing, big concern. But she said, before she died, she said, if I die with all this money in the bank, that'll be an obscenity. I need to use this money for something good.
Yeah.
You know, so people have some inner feeling that, you know, just accumulating more and more and more and more isn't going to be satisfactory, isn't going to give them satisfaction.
The young boy of that Facebook giving $3 billion was good cause, you know.
So yeah, that's just a normal thing if someone has a bit of a conscience. But there are those who have demonic nature, they don't care for that. They just want to, they also think I'll give charity, but that's more about their ego, you know, to show what a great philanthropist they are.
This man that you were talking about is going to meet the young Adutas and be thinking, am I the most perfect man in the world?
Yeah, you see, this is the truth is that there's always going to be somebody better than you, and there's always going to be somebody not as good as you. That's just the nature of things, you know. You can never be the greatest at everything, in you know, what, or even whatever your field is, there's always going to be somebody more. So it's really a foolish ambition. And Krishna says it's the the nature of those who are demonic by nature. They have this unceasing ambition, and they want everything. But it is not ultimately won't give us satisfaction. So then finally Krishna says, those who are free from the influence of these three gateways to hell, lust, anger and greed, they use their time for their real self-benefit. And what is that real self-benefit? That is to try to satisfy the Lord. So Krishna says, those who ignore the teachings of the scripture and just whimsically go on their own way, they'll never be successful, they'll never be happy, and they'll never reach the ultimate goal of life. So then he tells to Arjuna, so from what you know of the scripture, what you know from there, let that be your guide. What is good and what is bad, and you make that as your guide, and try to strive and act in a righteous way. So now, things are coming to the crunch now. Krishna's saying to Arjuna, so now you have to make your decision. What are you going to do? How you're going to act? So this should be one of the things that guides you is the scripture. So this is a well-known thing. If these three things are in consonance, then they are concluded to be the absolute truth. That is the scripture, the guru and the sadhu. The holy people, the spiritual teacher and the spiritual literature. If they all agree, then that is considered to be the truth by those who know. But our Guru Maharaj, he said, but there has to be also a fourth element has to be present there, and that has to be the recognition of the heart. The heart has to also say yes. Now this is also important. And all of us have this experience that our inner voice, our conscience, if you like, but maybe more than our conscience, our inner voice came to us and told yes. When we came in touch with Krishna consciousness, we got a yes. Yeah, this is... And, I'm sure everyone in this room has some experience of that. I mean, I remember when I was just still at school, and my English teacher, she gave me my first book about Krishna. It was Prabhupada's Ishopanishad. She also gave me a couple of other books as well. A book by Alan Watts, about Zen, and a book by Baba Ram Das, which was called Be Here Now. And I liked both, all of those books, but when I read that Ishopanishad, and I was telling her, giving her feedback, and I was saying, all the answers are here. And she was saying, you should be careful of anything that, that says that has all the answers. You should be very careful about that, So, okay. But what I was trying to tell her was that when I'm reading that, what Prabhupada's saying in there, every few sentences I'm getting, yeah, that's right, that's true, that's exactly right. They were it was chiming with something inside of me. So that voice that brought us to Krishna consciousness, that inner voice, we can rely on that voice. We can say that voice is the Chaita Guru. And if we are sincere, that voice will always guide us in the right way. So Srila Sridhar Maharaj, he said, no one can deceive you unless you're in the market to be deceived. And this is also, a very important point, because there are so many, agents of Maya out there waiting to deceive us, giving so many propositions to us. And it's really down to whether we want to be deceived or not. Whether we want something cheap and immediate, or whether we want something which is deep, and may require some self-sacrifice on our part. If we think about it, nothing ever in the world has been achieved without great sacrifice. Anything of any value, there has to be some sacrifice for that. Even in a mundane sense, even in an everyday sense, if somebody wants to become a doctor or a lawyer or something that they think is like a worthwhile thing, how much of their time they have to give for that? How many years do they have to study, you know, to be a doctor? And then how much clinical practice do you have to do? How many years as a junior doctor working like ridiculous shifts and all of these things? But they're prepared to do that because they feel this is something worthwhile. So should we think that the highest thing, that the awakening of our own soul, that it's not worth that same kind of commitment? If it's not just something that I can just buy off the peg and get in a few days, you know, then I'm not interested in it. Because this is the nature of how things are nowadays. We want instant everything, you know. We want instant coffee. We want Instagram. You know, we want everything instantly. When somebody sends you a text, if you don't reply within 5 minutes, they're like, what's wrong? You know, have I done something to offend you? Or, you know, do you know what I mean? Or an email, and he didn't reply to his email for 4 days, there must be something wrong, you know. This is like instantly, when the phone rings, it's saying, give me attention, like, you know, you have to immediately have to give attention to these things.
Instant gratification.
This is the nature of how the world has become nowadays, everything instant. People also want instant spirituality, you know. People want Facebook spirituality. They think that they're looking at Facebook and seeing, you know, somebody's funny quote or something, you know, like, that's spirituality. But it's not. That isn't spirituality. Of course, we can find many wonderful things on Facebook, on the internet. You know, you can find many things posted by the devotees on there, which we'll find inspiring and to our hearts in that. You know, what Guru Maharaj said, what Srila Gurudev said, those devotees are posting those things all the time. Okay, good for that. But there's no replacement for actual cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Don't think that, you know, you can practice Krishna consciousness by proxy through some social media network. You can't. Even this class now is going out on Facebook, but you know, and people are listening to that. Last week, I'm not belittling it. Last week, while we were broadcasting, there was 158 people watching the class. As what to speak of everyone here, 158 people. Then within a week, before, you know, because they send me the figures, you know, over 2,500 people saw that class over a week. I mean, I don't know how many of them watched it from beginning to end, but it told me 2,300 and something people saw this video. So that's pretty amazing, isn't it? You know, it's pretty amazing.
What was the reaction?
Well, my reaction was very, very happy. That I don't know. It only tells you like how many people looked at it, you know. But how many people looked at it and how many people watched it,
that
I don't
was
know.
Many computers viewed it. Many more people can watch.
Exactly. Yeah. So. You know, so that, you know, it has a good the good
we
thing.
We had Lokanath Swami. It was 150 people waiting outside when you came out speaking with Pandit.
So this is. You know, this is all good. It's a good thing, you know, and this is the future of how we need to preach as well, through using all of this modern technology. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, I know he would have approved of that. You know, he was very radical in his, you know, when he was preaching previously, when he came to Vrindavan in a motor car. That was considered a revolutionary thing. Sadhus didn't usually come in motor cars, you know. They used to walk. That was like part of their sannyas vow. But his thinking was, whatever modern technology there is, we must use that in the service of Krishna. And one of our godbrothers in the time of Guru Maharaj, he had this idea. He was going to buy a Boeing 747 and fly like sannyasis around the world for preaching. And he told to Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj laughed. Guru Maharaj very modest in his approach, but you know, he laughed, but he said, "My Guru Maharaj would have approved of this." You see, so, you know, why not? We can use all of these things for preaching Krishna consciousness. Whatever reaches people. Of course, my only fear is that people don't read books anymore. They just want to see a 5 minute or a 5 second flash thing on the computer, you know. And modern technology, it's shown that people are losing their power of attention. They can't focus on anything for more than 15 seconds or something, you know. So but we can also try and capture people. 15 second, small shows about Krishna consciousness. Say something substantial that captures people and draws people in. But ultimately, we have to give our time and our energy to cultivating Krishna consciousness. We can't always be, sitting on the Facebook. Sometimes we have to switch it off and take out our japamala and worship our Thakur, and
we can't just tell other people to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also said that. I mean, of course, there was no internet or anything in his time, but you know, the common thing, and it is still common today, is that if you want to worship Krishna, you pay a priest to do some puja for you. You engage a priest, you give some money or something, and they do a puja to worship Krishna for you. But Saraswati Thakur would say, no, this isn't sufficient, that you pay somebody to worship Krishna on your behalf. You yourself have to worship Krishna. You yourself have to make a relationship with Krishna. Ultimately, we all have an eternal relationship with the Lord, and we have to cultivate that. And you can't do that by proxy. That we have to do that ourselves. And, of course, we do that under the direction and through the agency of Guru and Vaishnava, by engaging our energy in their service. And that's not that they're a third party in between us and God. But rather, Srila Guru Maharaj described it as a telescopic system. That the more lenses you have in your telescope, the clearer and more defined your vision of the object of your vision will be. So all of the Vaishnavas, they're like lenses, and the more guardians that we have, the more fortunate we are, the more clear our vision of Krishna will be. This is Sambandhagyan. It's necessary for us to understand who is Krishna and what is Krishna. Just that some superficial idea won't satisfy. Once I was on the plane going to India, and one Indian lady sitting next to me, and she's saying, "Thank you so much for liking our God." "Thank you so much." I said, "Okay." She said, "Do you have any picture of Krishna for me?" So maybe, I can't remember, I gave some picture to her or something. "But thank you very much for liking our God." But, this is a very superficial understanding, our God. Who is Krishna and what is Krishna? This is important for us to know. And who are we? So Guru Maharaj used to say that the I is more important than the deity. That means, and what he meant by that was, that to develop the proper vision with which we can perceive the deity. So he would say, when you come to see the deity, you should not think, "I'm seeing Krishna." But rather you should think, "Krishna is seeing me. And I'm coming before him and offering myself to him." So Krishna is seeing me. And of course, we may have some appreciation. Oh, he's dressed very beautifully. He looks very gorgeous, and with his peacock feather and with the flute in hand and all of that. But we're always going to be limited by our inner conception of what we see when we see the Lord. As sometimes you go to the temple and the priests themselves say, call the deity the idol. So we can understand what their idea is. But we never think of Krishna as an idol. One lady said to me, your religion is wrong because you worship idols. And I said, no, I don't worship idols, I worship Krishna. She said, who's that? And I said, that's God. Krishna is God. I said, have you read Bhagavad Gita? She said, what's that? I said, well, how you can tell your religion is wrong if you don't know who is Krishna and you've never read Bhagavad Gita? How you can say that? First read that and then you can tell. We can have some discussion about that. Anyway, so we have to come to have some knowledge about Krishna. It is not mundane knowledge or just gyan. You know, we understand that ultimately pure devotion is gyan shunya bhakti. That's almost like an oxymoron. You know, that means like knowledge-free devotion, gyan shunya. But, and that means like the devotion of the Braja Gopis. They're not considering, you know, Krishna as the Supreme Lord or anything like that, or they're not scholars of Vedanta or any of these things. They just know Krishna as their most lovable boyfriend, actually. This is how they think. He's ours, and we don't care about anything else. We know religion, but we don't care if we have to cross that religion to come to Krishna. That's what we only care about Krishna. This is gyan shunya bhakti. But we can't imitate that. By imitating that in our fallen stage, then we'll commit a heinous crime, actually. By thinking that with this, you know, flesh conception, this flesh body and everything, that we can, with this flesh body, we can have a relationship with Krishna, like the Braja Gopis or something like that. It is a great mistake. So it is necessary, Sambandha Gyan is necessary. This is one of the first things that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami teaches in Chaitanya Charitamrita, are these three things: Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. These are the subject matters that he speaks about. So, and first, Sambandha, and Sambandha is necessary. Sambandha means what you need to know, in other words. What you need to know. So, who is Krishna? We need to know that. And who are we in relation to Krishna? What is this world? What is Maya? And what are their interrelationships between us, between all of those things? Then when we understand that the sole object of all Vedic knowledge is Krishna. This is what the Veda means to teach, is that the worship and service of Krishna is the param dharma. If once we understand that, then we have to know Abhideya. That means, then how do we reach Krishna? From where we are now, how do we go from this base body consciousness, this nature of exploitation? How do we become dedicated servants of Krishna? This is called Abhideya. And this is the process by which we acquire that. That is, based on our Sambandha Gyan, we, under the direction of the Sadguru and the Vaishnavas, we begin our spiritual practice. The spiritual practice, our sadhana bhakti, that is meant to uncover our spiritual nature. We have to do that. Cheto dharpana marjanam. Our soul is covered now with misconception. Guru Maharaj said, acquired prejudice and acquired misconception, acquired tendencies from this material world. They have covered our soul, and we think we're something that we're not. And we think that the goal of life is something that it's not. You know, we're like Indra with his piglets. You know, Indra was cursed to become a pig. Because, you know, Indra's always being cursed, if you read Srimad Bhagavatam and other places. He's always doing something and getting cursed of some rishi or sadhu or someone giving curse to him. So, once he was cursed to become a pig. And immediately he came to earth and he became a big fat pig. And he had a nice piggy wife and nice piggy children. And he's living in the pigsty, you know, wallowing in the what they wallow in, you know, and enjoying his pig life. And meanwhile, no one to fill his post in heaven, so they had to come, ask him, come back. Lord Brahma came and said, "Oh, we need you back in heaven." He said, "I don't want to go to heaven. I'm very happy here. I've got my lovely wife. I've got my beautiful children. I've got all the stool that I can swim around in, that I can, you know, what more could anybody want?" Then Lord Brahma said, "But you're Indra, you know, you're the king of heaven. Your place is in Swargaloka." But it didn't matter, whatever he did, whatever he said, couldn't convince him. So then Lord Brahma thought some drastic action is necessary here. So he took his pig, his sow, and his piglets, and he drowned them all in the lake. And then, like, Indra's besides himself. Can you imagine? His wife, his children, they've all been drowned. And now do you realize? No, what you've done? And so, okay, then you also have to go in the lake. So they had to drown him, also Indra, the pig, in the lake. And when he gave up his pig body and he came out, "Oh, now I remember who I am. I remember who I am." So we may say, "Oh, it was very cruel, wasn't it? A very cruel thing that he did." You know, but it's kind of like, what do they say, what do they call that? Tough love. You know? He needed that because he had a higher purpose that he had to fulfill. And when, you know, when everything was gone and he came back to his original consciousness, Indra consciousness, you can say, "Oh, now I know what a fool I was," you know. Worry, maybe a little shudder to think that he was in love with a pig and, you know, thought this, and thought that what he was eating, that was very nice
to eat. If he wanted to go back, I can still arrange for you.
Yeah, so, you know, then we're also like that in that situation. We're thinking that all of our relatives and all of our, you know, all of our paraphernalia and all of our responsibilities in this world, that's all real. That's all part of our reality. We can't leave that. You know, we've got all this wonderful stuff going on. Okay, yeah, it's a bit hard sometimes, but, you know, it's pretty good, really. You know, everything's pretty good. So I'm not suggesting that anybody, you know, like, drowns someone's wife and children in the pond or anything to make them wake up. I'm not suggesting that at all. But the situation is comparable. What we're thinking now as being reality, it's no less unreal than Indra being a pig. We're living in this human life. But for what? You know, actually, what is our purpose in life? Is it just to fulfill our family obligation or social obligation or, you know, all of these things? Is that what life's for? Is that what life's about? No, it's not. So this is why Krishna says in the 18th chapter, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Hantam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yishami Mashucha. It's a very clear, Guru Maharaj said, Krishna's clarion call, wake up call. Whatever you think your duty in this world is, you can leave that and come to me. And don't think that you'll be overcome by sin for neglecting your obligations in this world. You won't. It won't happen. I'll absolve you of that. Don't fear. And you'll come to me. Sharanam Braja. Sharanam means by surrender into me. And Sharanam Braja means you'll come to me in Braja, in Vrindavan. You'll come to me in Vrindavan. So, you know, we should believe this. We should believe this. We shouldn't believe very much about all of this phantasmagoria that's going on in this world. It seems really real, but it's really not. And it's really not that important. What's important is waking up to our relationship with Krishna. And that's Abhideya. Abhideya means through our sadhana. And mainly our sadhana is through the cultivation of Naam, Harinam, through Nama Sankirtan and through Naam Japa, we'll awaken our spiritual consciousness. Those acquired prejudices and misconceptions and attachments that have piled on top of our soul and covered us, they'll become cleared from that. Mahaprabhu says this is the first symptom or the first effect of Nama Sankirtan, is that the mirror of our consciousness becomes clean. And once that becomes clean, we can perceive our own self, who we actually are. Then we'll think, oh my gosh, that mean conception of me, myself, who I thought I was, why did I think that? Guru Maharaj says, if you meet your own soul, the golden person within you, you'll feel ashamed to think that you identified with such gross, something so gross as being really that was what I thought was me.
Big body.
So this is important for us, Abhideya. And Abhideya, that's not to be finished in a few hours or a few days or a few years. It's a lifetime endeavor, and even maybe lifetimes endeavor. It is ultimately down to the mercy of the Lord. But we should be prepared to be in it for the long run, however long it takes. You know, if it's worthwhile, then we should be prepared to do whatever it takes and for however long it takes us. Guru Maharaj would say it's not a fun. It means it's not a game. It's not just, you know, something that we, like a lifestyle choice that we make, you know. Oh yeah, that Hare Krishna lifestyle, that seems pretty cool, you know, I'll give that a go for some time, you know. I like that, I like the food, I like the people, you know. No, it's more than that. You have to own it. It has to be imperative to you. The cultivation of your soul, the awakening of your soul, there couldn't be anything more imperative for us to do. But we should understand that it's not going to happen instantly. It's not impossible. It can happen. It does happen sometimes. Sometimes, by the Lord's grace, He can awaken somebody to their full spiritual potential immediately. But that's not the usual thing that happens. Usually it happens by degree. But some attempt has to come from our side. We don't just sit back and say, okay, Lord, I'm waiting. You know? No. Yeah, all opportunity is given to us. You know, there's a story maybe in Mahabharata or somewhere, I can't remember. But like a yogi, and his guru told him, before his guru passed away, he told him, Krishna will always give his protection to you. Don't worry. So he's sitting there, then he sees, you know, he's sitting in the forest, then he sees, like, all the birds, they all disappear from the forest. No, that's ominous. Never mind, Krishna will protect me, my Gurudev told me. Then he sees all the animals running, madly running out of the forest. Oh, something going on here. Never mind, Krishna will protect me. Then some people coming. The forest is on fire. Let's go. Come on. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. It's okay. My Gurudev told me Krishna will protect me. He's sitting like that. Even then, finally, you know, the rescue helicopter comes. There's flames all around him. Come on, climb up the ladder. Come and escape. No, no, no. My Gurudev told me Krishna will protect me. It's okay. Off you go. And burns to death. Then finally, you know, meets the Lord. And says, what happened? You know, my Gurudev told me that you would protect me, but look, I was burnt up in the fire, you know. And he said, and the Lord says, but how many times I tried to warn you? The birds, the animals, even the people told you to go, and I even sent the rescue helicopter. What more do you want me to do? So, you know, this is a practical thing. The Lord is giving us so much help, but we have to avail ourselves of that help. The Lord is giving us the association of the devotees. The Lord is giving us the opportunity to serve the Lord, to serve Him. His deity form is one of the ways in which he gives Himself to us, so that he will accept our service through that form. If it is done under the direction of His devotee, that service is as good as the service in Vaikuntha. It is the same. We shouldn't think it's different. It's the same. So much opportunity is given to us. Krishna is self-sufficient. He's not in necessity of anything. He doesn't require our service. He doesn't require for us to go to the kitchen and cook for Him. Radharani is His cook. Sage Durvasa blessed her. Whatever this girl will cook will taste of ecstasy. And whoever eats what she cooks will have a long life. This is Radharani. Mother Jashoda also, great cook. And then what will we cook? You know, in comparison, it will be some tasteless thing. He doesn't require anything from us. Doesn't require us to wave incense in front of Him or lamps in front of Him. He doesn't require that. But the truth is, we require that. We require our senses and our body and our mind to be engaged in His service. When we offer arati to the deity, it should be our meditation. How I am offering the elements of the earth in the service and worship of my Lord. It's for our benefit. It's not for His benefit. We shouldn't think, oh, I'll come and put some money in the box and I'll be Krishna's benefactor. They can use it for the service of Krishna. I'll be the benefactor of Krishna. That's a foolish thing to think. When we give something to the sadhu or something to the Lord, we're the benefactor. He's not the beneficiary of that. We're the beneficiary of that. He's doesn't require anything. He's Lakshmipati. And Lakshmi Devi is His bride. Then what will we give Him? You know, even if you're Rockefeller and you give your whole fortune for the service of Krishna, I'm not saying don't, I'm saying do it, if I meet Mr. Rockefeller. But it's not that Krishna's in need of that. It's not that Krishna's a poor man. Krishna has the greatest wealth in the greatest quantity and quality. And even we say, oh, there's no Aishwarya in Vrindavan, you know, it's all forest flowers and simplicity and like that. But what's that shloka we chant every day? Dibyad Brindaranya Kalpa Drumadha Srimad Ratnangara Singhasanasta. That Radha and Govinda, they're in a Singhasan, a throne which is bedecked with jewels. Ratna Singhasanasta. So everything is there. It's not that Krishna's, you know, just a poor cowherd boy. Everything is at His disposal. So we should not think that, you know, oh, they need some help at the temple, I should go and give some service to the temple. Rather, we should think, let me go and get some service at the temple. I need some help. I need to do something for my own soul. Then I can come. You know, Krishna doesn't require anything, but for our benefit, our Gurudev has established so many temples all over the world for our benefit, not for Krishna's benefit. Krishna is already fully self-satisfied. Yeah.
Is it still a nice thing to think, oh, let me help at the temple, because it's the same? I can't answer this question properly. We need service for ourselves, but it's nice to develop that attitude of serving others. That's yes. what it's for, isn't it? So it's kind of like both, isn't it?
Yeah, but we want the right serving attitude, but what isn't the right serving attitude is thinking that by giving my service, I'm benefiting them. You understand?
Yes.
So that would be a wrong attitude.
Like, help them, I want to help them, I know.
Yeah, but you know, the Lord helps those that help themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So this is, if we shouldn't think, oh, I'm not going to the temple, they don't need anyone there to serve. You know, Devashish said, Krishna's fully self-sufficient, they don't need any service there. But, you know, practically, some service is necessary. You know, we do need to, you know, make the offerings to Krishna, fulfill our, that's our duty to our Guru. When we made a promise to our Guru. You know, sometimes societies, they make vows at the time of their initiation. I'll follow these four regulative principles, I'll chant so many rounds every day, all of these things. But all the time that I've been in Chaitanya Sarasvati Math, over 30 years, I never heard Srila Sridhar Maharaj or Srila Govinda Maharaj mention that at the time of initiation. Of course, it's assumed that you know that. It doesn't mean that those things aren't important, but they're fundamental things. We know that already. But when we come to our Gurudev and we take initiation, our vow should be, I promise to serve Krishna with my full energy for the rest of my life. That's what the vow we make at the time of initiation. I'm promising you that from this day forward, I'll serve Krishna under your direction. This is our vow. And we mustn't leave that vow at any time. You know, sometimes we get distracted, sometimes our circumstances make it difficult for us, but we should try and mold our life in such a way that every day I will do some service to Krishna and my Guru and the Vaishnavas. Then your life will be perfect. It doesn't have to be anything grand, just a simple thing, some simple thing every day. If you can do that every day, then your life will be perfect. You know, Krishna says, what you think of at the time of your death, that you will attain. So, what does that mean, you know? Does that mean that, you know, we have to, you know, practice thinking about Krishna all the time? Yes, it does. But more than that, it means, you know, like, with what conception do you live your life? Because that's what will come to you at the end of your life. You know, not anything superficial. What you believe, how you see the world, how you understand the reality, that's what will come to your aid at the time of your death. That will come to you. So, you know, if you practice every day serving Krishna and try and make that your heart's goal, then at the time when your death time comes, that's what you'll think about, your service to the Lord. And then suddenly you'll find you're in another place with the opportunity to serve the Lord. That's all. But if you're, you know, if at the time of death you're thinking about, oh, I never did that, or I never did that thing I wanted to do, or that girl that I always was loved, and all that, you know, all of these things, if those are the things that you're thinking about, where will you go? Where will your consciousness take you? Back to the samsara again, you know, because that's what everybody's thinking. That's what everybody's thinking. Oh, my family, oh, my this, oh, my that, oh, a lamentation about all of the unfulfilled dreams that we had in our life. Then, okay, go back again and try and fulfill those dreams. But, oh, if we're thinking, oh, I never properly served Krishna, I never got that, that's good. Then, you know, if you're lamenting about that, how I couldn't properly give my service to the Lord, then you'll find you're in a position again to try to serve me. And one day, that means you'll wake up and you'll be in Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna will be there. Oh, you've come. I've been waiting for you. You've been trying so long to serve me. Now here's your opportunity. Come and serve me. Be with me. It's a practical thing. We're not dealing with an unfeeling mechanical law of nature. We're dealing with a person. Krishna's a person. I tried to reach you, Lord. Maybe I wasn't successful. But it's all, all rights are reserved by you anyway. It's not my endeavor. It's not that I endeavored so hard, now you must, give me what my result. No, it's not that like that at all.
Justice.
But Krishna's very merciful. And that we tried, that touches Krishna's heart. He tried to come to me. So many obstacles he went through. She went through. So many difficulties she went through. So many things came in her way, in his way before they... And that touched me. I want to embrace that person. This is Krishna's nature. Krishna's nature is like that. He always wants to reciprocate love with his devotees. So when we try in sincere way to reach him, I want to love you, Lord. We're not sahajyas. We don't say, oh, I love Krishna. Because that would be a lie. If we love Krishna, what are we doing in the world? All these things that we're doing. If we loved Krishna, we wouldn't be doing them, would we? Whatever it is. But I want to love you. I want to learn to love you. My heart is black. It's full of so many material things. But overriding that is my desire to connect to you again, to love you, to be with you. I want that. Is Krishna going to ignore that? Of course not. That's what he wants from us. Our sincere attempt. Virtue is its own reward. When sincerely we make the attempt, then Krishna will extend his hand to us and lift us up. It's a guarantee. Krishna's told that in the Gita. Manmana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskaro mami vaisasi satyam te pratijani priyoshime. Manmana bhav. Manmana bhav means give your heart and your mind to me. Majjaji mam namaskaro. Offer your obeisances to me. Become my devotee. Mami vaisasi satyam te. Whatever you do, do it as to reach me, to come to me. And you will come to me. Why? Pratijani priyoshime. You're priyoshime. Priyoshime means you're very dear to me. You'll come to me because you're dear to me. And that's everyone. Because he created us. We're part of him. Then everyone, even the most insignificant of his creation, is dear to him. Then we must... He will accept us. If we sincerely want him. If we sincerely want him. Even if there's so many other things that we want too. Doesn't matter. That's all just a phantasmagoria, We're like children. Like when children are watching the television, in between, there's all these adverts, right? Especially coming up to Christmas, all the new toys and everything. And your kids will be going, oh, I want that, Mum. I want that, Dad. I want that. Every single thing that comes up, I want that, I want that, I want that. But you just laugh and ignore it because, they're just children. They can't help it. It would be very foolish to say, okay, and like start listing every single thing and I'm going to buy all of those things for you. Your kids would be spoiled. But so similarly, we're like children. In our relationship with Krishna in this world, we're like children. And we're seeing, oh, I want that. I want that. Oh, I want that. All of these things that are coming in front of us. Oh yeah, I want to try that. Krishna just laughs about that. Okay, you want all that. But do you want me? And if the answer is yes, even if it's a little bit yes, then we're saved. That's what Krishna sees. He doesn't see all the foolishness. Because he made us, he knows we're going to be foolish. He made us like that. What can we do? Krishna, very merciful and very kind. And he wants to accept us. He wants to take us back. And as Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Dev, he comes not only to accept us, but to search after us and bring us back, to drag us back. The Lord's loving search for his lost servants. This is Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Dev. He wants to assert his self so much that he'll claim us and take us back to him. This is what Krishna consciousness is about. This is why we have this temple, why we have these meetings, why we discuss Bhagavad Gita, all of these things. Just to foster that idea within us that Krishna is waiting for us and wants us. And we have an opportunity to connect with him. This human form of life is the gateway to connect with Krishna. Animal life, you can't do that. Always just looking, where's food, where's sex, where's protection, where's shelter, all of these things. That's animal life. But human being has some reasoning faculty, some ability to think about higher things. The dogs and cats aren't thinking about that. They're just thinking, where's food, where's comfort, where's, you know, all of these things. And even the gods in heaven, they're not so much thinking about their soul. They're thinking about heavenly enjoyment. The enjoyment is so wonderful there that they get carried away by that. They're not thinking about God very much. There's some connection with God because they're gods and goddesses. So some connection with the divinity is there. But the pleasure in those realms is so great that you become carried away by that. You become overwhelmed by that. So it's better to be here on earth as a human being, suffering a little bit heaven, a little bit hell. Enjoying a little bit heaven, suffering a little bit hell. Not too much that we can't cope with it, but just enough to make us realize this isn't our home. That there's something else that we want, or something else that we require, and we should search that out. Search for Sri Krishna, reality, the beautiful. Then we'll be fulfilled. And we can do it. It's not an impossible thing. You know, it's very possible. And Krishna consciousness means that you can do everything that you do in your life, but connected with Krishna. Then it becomes valuable and it becomes worthwhile. And actually that same thing that was binding you to this material world, when you connected with Krishna, that same, very same activity will liberate you from the world. It's difficult to understand. But it's a very sublime and a truth which Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. If you do everything as an offering to me, you'll come to me. So it doesn't mean, you know, you have to shave your head and put on a red cloth and live in a temple. You can do what, you know, Prabhupada says in his commentary of Bhagavad Gita at the beginning, better to be an honest sweeper of the street than a charlatan meditator. You know, many people do that and they set themselves up and make a nice little living for themselves, a little occupation for themselves. Especially in India, you see so many people, yeah, you know. Yeah. It's a nice living, you know. Even in this country, all the priests and that, they're all paid.
Yeah.
You know, they get a nice little house and a car, and you know, and if you're Church of England, you can have a nice wife as well.
Yeah.
You know, but
pension as well.
Early pension, everything. Yeah.
We'll have a nice husband.
My friend who I was at college with. I met him one time, and he said, "Oh, you joined the temple, everything." He said, "Yeah." And his father was a priest, you know. And I said, he said, "You should have come and spoke to me. We could have, you know, had some." I didn't know you had any inclination about God. I said, "And your father?" The conversation went on. I said, "What does he do now?" And he says, "Oh, he's retired now." And I said, oh, what does that mean then? I said, does he still like give service at the temple, at the church and everything? He said, no, he just spends his time in the potting shed now, you know, with his plants and like that. He did his bit, you know. 30 years he worked in the church, you know. And now he's retired, he's enjoying his life now, you know. So oh, isn't like this the time when he should be like really cultivating his spiritual life? He said, no, it was like it was his job. It was his profession, you know. So, you know, religious life isn't a profession, but it is an imperative that we can all understand is urgent, and we can, and we have to make that part of our life. We have to make that part of everything that we do. Not, you know, it's good. We spend half an hour every day. We give some time for our Krishna meditation or Krishna worship or whatever. Half an hour, 2 hours. But what about the other 22 hours? Or do we just forget about Krishna then, you know? No, we should do everything. Every minute of the day we should be trying to connect with Krishna. Everything, whatever we do. And there's no reason why we can't. It takes practice. But you can do everything that you do right now and just connect it with Krishna. That may take some thinking, may take some application. How do I connect this with Krishna? But that in itself is Krishna consciousness. Trying to work that out is Krishna consciousness. Trying to work out how your life can be connected with Krishna all the time, that in itself is part of Krishna consciousness. You shouldn't think, you know, yeah, I've got my spiritual life and I've got my material life. No, you've got life, one life. And as much as it's dedicated with Krishna, it's a spiritual life. And as much as it's not, it's a material life. It's not like you've got two lives. That's a kind of schizophrenia, you know. That you'll develop a mental illness if you try and do that, you know. No. Make your life a holy life. Try to make yourself to be in the world but not of the world. It takes practice. It's a lifetime's endeavor to do that. But it's not impossible. We can do it. We can all do it. And Krishna consciousness provides us with the tools to do that.
You know the people in the Golden Age, did they love Krishna?
It's funny you should say that. Somebody asked our Guru Maharaj that, more or less that same question. And Guru Maharaj said, what do you think that in Satyut Yuga, do you think everyone was Krishna conscious? And that devotee said, well, yeah, actually, that's what I thought. And Guru Maharaj said, no, it's not the fact. In Satyut Yuga, everyone's engaged in spiritual culture, but it was meditation on abstract Brahman, and not Krishna consciousness. Yeah, people didn't know, maybe a few, but the majority of people, they didn't know anything about Krishna. They know about Brahman, and the cultivation of the spirit. And they spent thousands of years engaged in that kind of meditation. So Guru Maharaj would say, the rainy day is not the bad day, but the bad day is the day when we can't hear something about Krishna. So, you know, we think, we're kind of educated to think that, oh, Kali Yuga is the really bad time, and the Satya Yuga, that was the best time spiritually. But actually it's not true, because the revelation that Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Dev has come to give to the world, that's never been revealed in the world before. It wasn't known in Satyut Yuga. It wasn't known in Treta Yuga. Even in Dwapara Yuga, very few knew about that. Even those who saw Krishna himself, they didn't know that. Those who met Krishna on the battlefield in Kurukshetra, they didn't know. Some knew. Some understood, oh, he's Param Brahman. But even those who knew that, They didn't have access to his Braja Leela. This is a very fine thing. But Mahaprabhu has come to the world to distribute that to everybody. So the finest conception of spirituality, that's why Krishnadas Kaviraj says, Anarpita Chirincharat Kuranayavati Nakala. Anarpita Chirincharat means you came to give that thing which has never been given to the world before. Ujjala rasa, prema bhakti. has not been available in the world before.
Even in all the other incarnations of Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, this is the Mahaprabhu has come to give this. It is unprecedented. So the highest thing given because, like Guru Maharaj said, right, that when the situation is very dire, you know, like if there's a big epidemic or famine or something, and some very rich person wants to help with that, they can't give ordinary things, can they? They have to give something that they think is valuable, right? Something, you know, like they're not just going to put a few pennies in the collection tin. Now, Bill Gates isn't going to do a few pennies in the collection tin. He's going to do some big thing, which he's trying to do. You know, whatever you think about that, that's another thing. But, you know, so Mahaprabhu, he has the highest wealth. Then that is his coin. With that coin, he will come to help the most needy. And in Kali Yuga, we're the most needy in Kali Yuga because we don't have the same level of spiritual attainment and so on that they had in previous ages. In Kali Yuga, everything is bad. You know, everyone is short-lived. Everyone is troubled. Everyone is always fighting. It's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Everybody says one thing and does the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. It's the very nature of this world, you know. There's not been not one of us in this room, from the youngest to the oldest, who can say, with their hand on their heart, there's been one day in their life when there hasn't been a war going on somewhere in this world. All of us, we live with war all the time. Maybe it's a little distant from us, thankfully, but it's going on somewhere. This is the nature of this world. Nobody lives, you know, if you get to live 100, you get a telegram from the Queen. You know, that's considered a big deal, right? Most of us won't live to 100. Then what can we do? You know, if you want to be a perfect yogi, they were engaged with that for thousands of years. You know, with no, and in Satyayuga there's no seduction, so there's no marriage in Satyayuga. No one's engaged in a sexual relationship, except the Prajapatis, whose business is that. But there's no marriage, there's no family life in Satyayuga. They're only concentrating on spiritual culture, whatever that may be. And it's only in Treta Yuga that seduction entered into the world.
How do the people come there?
They're called Prajapatis. That means that they make children, basically. You know, that's their job, the Prajapatis. They're the progenitors of mankind. And they do that as their service. But there's no family life in Satyayuga. There's no family units or anything like that. So, you know, then in Kali Yuga, everything is bad, you can say. But, so then Mahaprabhu comes in the Kali Yuga, then he has to give the highest type of help. And that means the greatest revelation he has to give. The greatest revelation, because that's his property.
But he gave Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Before there was a kind of culture, religious thing.
Yeah.
Karma Kand and all.
Yes,
that,
that's right. Yeah.
But real religion, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave.
Real religion came from Mahaprabhu. Yeah. Even we're discussing Bhagavad Gita. Even what Krishna gave in Bhagavad Gita, that's not understood by many. He himself says that in there. Yeah. Out of many thousands of men, very few strive to understand the truth. And those who understand the truth, almost none of them know me as I am. This is Krishna's statement in the Bhagavad Gita.
And he even comes and gives the highest form of Krishna consciousness.
Yes. So this is... And also Krishna makes this condition. When he says Sarva Dharma Parichaya, he's saying, you have to surrender to me. But Mahaprabhu doesn't even make that condition. Would you like Krishna Prema? Here you go, take him. Surrender will come later on. Here's some Krishna Prema for you. And if you don't want it, then, Nityananda Prabhu, he doesn't want it. And then Nityananda Prabhu will go and capture him. You must have it. You must take it. Like double whammy, you know? Mahaprabhu giving to those who want it, and Nityananda Prabhu giving to those who don't want it. So they're like, all the bases are covered. That's a fantastic thing. It's a good news. It's a win-win situation. You know, the American army, or the Marines at least, I think it is, they have their saying, you know, that no man left behind. That's their motto, you know. No man left behind. This is Mahaprabhu's motto, you know. No one to be left behind. Everyone's coming. No one to be left.
I think Guru said, in my time, where the whole world will say Krishna, Krishna, and it's happened in my time. I thought it might not, but it happened. Whole world, everywhere is Krishna.
What did you want to say?
I was asking, like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go and just, like, touch them,
yeah,
and they will get the Krishna prema.
Yeah,
like that.
Who will see him? Who will be touched by him? Who will hear him chant Harinam? Immediately they'll get Krishna prema.
But from the other side is they are already acting in this because they came already from the spiritual world.
Yeah, that's also a very intelligent observation. And somebody asked Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura that same question. Oh, if they're all parshadas of Krishna, eternal associates, then how does that lila help us? Because we are not parshadas of Krishna. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, no, they're not all parshadas. Some are new recruits. And he gave a list. And one was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. New recruit. He's not in Krishna lila before. New recruit. So that's also there. That's also there. And Haridas Thakur, he made this question to Mahaprabhu. Then if everyone, Mahaprabhu made question to Haridas, actually. He said, oh, you say that now I've descended with the holy name, that the whole world is liberated, Haridas. But I don't see the world has become vacant. And Haridas said, don't try and fool me. I know who you are. You don't try and fool me. Said, but you should know, and you know very well, that no vacuum can exist. So if this whole world becomes empty of jiva souls, in the next moment it'll be full again, because there's always jiva souls coming. There's no end to their supply, if you like, you know. But he's coming. He's come for us. Come for that reason.
Devi Devata also, you know, searching for it. It says in Tulsi Devizati,
yeah.
Shiva Shukanada Dhol Gurmadika Dundata Firat Mahamuni Gyani.
Yeah.
They're all searching.
Of course. It's said that the gods and goddesses, Deva Devati, Devata and Devi, they're praying to take birth in Kali Yuga as human being, to take part in Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan mission. We should have no doubt about who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is Krishna himself. He's not even, you know, they say, oh, he's the incarnation for Kali Yuga. That's true. But actually, he's avatari. He's the combined form of Radha and Govinda as one. He's not just avatar. He's avatari. And Guru Maharaj said, there's also some mystical explanation given in the scripture. Like at Imli Tala, there's some thing where he showed himself. Mahaprabhu showed himself as Radha and Govinda. But Guru Maharaj said, from our point of view, we can understand this way. That what comes first, the gift or the giver of the gift? Always the giver of the gift must be first. So Mahaprabhu is the giver of the gift, and his gift is Radha Krishna praying. So he is the origin of that. Who is the giver of the gift? He's the origin of that gift. And we can understand. He is more important. From our perspective, Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Devi is more than Krishna. Because he is Krishna with the added ingredient of Odarja, magnanimity. That's Radha's heart, you can say. The Bhav and Kanti of Radharani is the heart and halo of Srimati Radharani. And her heart is Odarja, that she wants to engage everyone in the service of her Lord. And when Krishna becomes overwhelmed with that feeling, absorbed by her heart and halo, then that Shyama Sundar becomes Gaura Sundar. Her name is Gaurangi, her golden limbs. And when Shyama Sundar, the Dark Lord Krishna, when he's embraced and overcome by her feeling of generosity, spiritual generosity, that imperative, he becomes mad with that, then that same Shyama Sundar now becomes transformed to Gaura Sundar. It is a very deep thing, a very important thing. And he has come, and we are to understand that. We are not to think that he is any like any other saint or avatar. He is unique. He is Krishna himself, and he has come with the sole purpose to distribute Krishna prema to everyone, to flood the whole universe with Krishna prema. That's his goal. He's the Lord, and then he must accomplish that. When it will happen, we cannot say, but in eternity is nothing, is it? Today or tomorrow or 1,000 years from now, in eternity is nothing. But it is inevitable, because he has told that. He has told it. And only once in the day of Lord Brahma he comes, as Mahaprabhu, the Avatari, Swayam Bhagavan Mahaprabhu. Once in the day of Lord Brahma, Krishna reveals himself as Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. That was this Dapara Juga just gone. He comes every Dapara Juga, but not as Swayam Bhagavan, only partial, maybe speaker of Gita or like that, but not as Swayam Bhagavan. And when following that Kali Juga, this Kali Juga, he comes as Swayam Bhagavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, you know, we live in great times. We live in very fortunate times. And we should try and take advantage of that. Get to the front of the queue. All right, time to stop, I think, for tonight. Is that okay?
Jai.
Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Jai Sri Krishna Arjun ki jai. Jai Sri Krishna Bhagavad Gita Study Group ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Shri Sri Guru Gauranga Radha Shyam Sundar Hari Jiu Ki Jai. Jai Gaura Premanandi.
Shri Padabhasis Prabhu Ki
Jai. Hariharaya Nama Krishna Jadavaya Namaha.
Hariharaya Nama Krishna Jadavaya Namaha.
Hariharaya Nama Krishna Jadavaya Namaha.
Jadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha.